Another Jesus, False Messiahs, Then and Now, by Robert C. Newman. The Apostle Paul, writing to one of his churches, rebuked them for being open to lies about Jesus in 2 Corinthians 11:4. This is in the New American Standard updated translation. He says, "For if one comes and preaches another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or if you receive a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted, you bear this beautifully." Paul is speaking rather ironically in this particular context. Even earlier, Jesus warned of imposters who would try to substitute for himself. In Mark 11:22, he says, "For false Christs and false prophets will arise, and will show signs and wonders in order to lead astray, if possible, the elect." We want to consider how this has happened in the past and is still happening today. We're going to divide our discussion into three big headings: another historical Jesus, another spiritual Jesus, another political Jesus. These categories will overlap somewhat, but they represent different emphases. First, another historical Jesus. Well, what do we mean by another historical Jesus? Though the phrase could be taken in several ways, we will understand it in this way: writings or teachings in which Jesus is pictured quite differently than he is in the New Testament Gospels. So, the term historical Jesus arises from what is probably the most famous survey of writings on this topic, Albert Schweitzer's book Quest of Historical Jesus, written in the early 1900s, translated into English in 1910. Schweitzer sketches over 100 retellings of the life of Jesus from the perspective of theological liberalism, written between the late 1700s and the early 1900s. But such retellings did not begin in the 1700s, nor end early in the 1900s, nor have they all had the same liberal theological perspective that those that Schweitzer collects did. The first retellings, popular in the early centuries of Christianity, were what we now call the Gnostic Gospels. Between perhaps AD 150 and 350, a number of pictures of Jesus were given from the theological perspective of Gnosticism. These include quite a few Gospels, of which the best known today are the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Mary, that is Mary Magdalene, the Gospel of Philip, and the Gospel of Judas. What was Gnosticism? Gnosticism was a religious movement in which Christianity was combined with various themes from Greek philosophy and religion. It was characterized by a belief that matter is bad, but spirit is good, that the Creator is evil, or at best ignorant, because matter is bad, he created it. The God of the Old Testament is not the God of the New Testament. And salvation is escape from the world of matter, which is, after all, bad. The Gnostic Jesus, then, naturally, is very different from the Jesus of the New Testament. The Gnostic Jesus seems to do nothing but teach. Teaches in secret to a small group. Only appears to have a physical body, does not die on the cross, and despises those who worship the Creator. Interest in Gnosticism has revived in recent years since the publication of the Nag Hammadi papyri, and this book cover in the background of this slide, the Nag Hammadi Library, edited by James M. Robison, represents the most easily accessible English translation of these Gnostic Gospels, anyway. Moving beyond Schweitzer, since Schweitzer wrote, there have been a revival of different pictures of Jesus in the late 20th century. These include Jesus Christ Superstar, the Jesus of the Passover Plot, Jesus the Magician, and the Jesus of the Da Vinci Code. Let's have a quick look at each of these. Jesus Christ Superstar is a rock opera, first performed in 1971, and a film made from it that was distributed in 1973. Rock opera had Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice as the composer and librettist, and the plot of the opera is Jesus is a superstar religious guru, but his fame goes to his head. He begins believing what others are saying about him, that he is God, and this leads him to the cross. He blames God, but dies anyway. And then Judas speaks from the grave, and he also blames God. There is no resurrection. The Passover Plot is a book published in 1966 by Hugh J. Schoenfield, and I understand some years later that there was a B-grade movie made out of it, but never saw it. In the Passover Plot, here Jesus has almost everything under control. He learns to interpret prophecy, decides he is the Messiah, sets out to fulfill prophecy, stages his triumphal entry, blows Judas's mind, times the events so that he will only be on the cross briefly, but unplanned by him and not under his control, he is speared by a soldier. Some of his friends who are in on the plot revive him in the tomb, and he sends a message to his other disciples, but then dies. Jesus the Magician is a book published in 1978 by Morton Smith. In this book, Jesus is a Gnostic magician. He's possessed by a spirit, claims to be deity. He develops a technique of self-hypnosis, and by this technique, he claims to be able to fly and to be able to teach flying to his disciples, who presumably are also hypnotized in this technique. He visits heaven and says he sees God, and tells his followers that he has been freed from the law by God. The Da Vinci Code, a murder mystery published in 2003, is set in the present, yet its plot turns on the idea that Jesus was merely human, that he had children, and that the Holy Grail is Jesus' royal bloodline, not the cup at the Last Supper. Besides these retellings of the life of Christ, other pictures of Jesus have arisen with the New Age movement. The New Age movement resembles the old Gnosticism in being a combination of other religious ideas with Christianity, but these come from westernized versions of Hinduism and Buddhism rather than from Greek philosophy and religion. Like Gnosticism, the New Age movement is characterized by a diverse group of beliefs taught by various gurus rather than a single unified system. Some characteristic features of the New Age movement include the idea of reincarnation, but that coupled with kind of a Western idea of individualism, and the idea that humans can rise to levels of being above humanity. So somewhat different than the Eastern religions in which reincarnation is viewed as something of a curse, here it's viewed as moving up the ladder, so to speak. And whereas in the Eastern religions, the ultimate state is what you would say, losing one's individuality in the One or something of that sort. That does not happen, at least in some versions of the New Age movement theology, if you like. In our talk here, we're going to give two New Age pictures of Jesus, one of Edgar Cayce and the other of Benjamin Krim. Edgar Cayce's Jesus. According to Edgar Cayce, Jesus became the Christ through acceptance of God's will. Jesus exemplifies the universal Christ consciousness. Jesus became aware that he would be the savior of the world when he fell in Eden. You say, what? Jesus fell in Eden? Well, that leads us into another feature of Edgar Cayce's view, namely that there are previous incarnations of Jesus. Jesus was first incarnated as Amulius of Atlantis, and then later than that as Adam, and then as Enoch, and then as Melchizedek, as Joseph, that would presumably be the son of Jacob, then as Joshua, then as Zend, the father of Zoroaster, and as some others that are listed on pages 23, 28, and 37 of Cayce's book, Edgar Cayce's Story of Jesus. Jesus and Mary. Well, Jesus is viewed by Cayce as having sinned in at least some of these incarnations. His mother Mary did not sin in her incarnation as his mother. She had no human father in this incarnation either. In a previous incarnation, she was Eve, the twin soul of Jesus. So that's Edgar Cayce's Jesus. Benjamin Krem's Christ. According to Benjamin Krem, the Christ is the master of all masters, but not God. He is the Son of God, and so are we. See this in Benjamin Krem's work, The Reappearance of the Christ and the Master of Wisdom, Masters of Wisdom, published 1980. The Christ is not an individual, but an office. That's fairly common in New Age circles, but then Krem's own spin. An office held for the past 26,000 years by Lord Maitreya. Maitreya is an Islamic word and shows up in Shiite Islam. Lord Maitreya was manifested in Palestine by overshadowing his disciple Jesus. Jesus is not the Christ. He was and still is a disciple of the Christ. Jesus gave up his body for the use of the Christ, who took over his body from the baptism onwards. Jesus, in his next incarnation, as Apollonius of Tyana, became a master. He lives now in a 600-year-old Syrian body in Palestine. Well, that's Benjamin Krem's Christ. So another historical Jesus. Are any of these pictures really consistent with what is taught in the Gospels in the New Testament? Answer, no. But if people don't know what the Bible teaches, they are easily deceived by any charlatan that comes along. And if they reject what the Bible teaches, they will have no one but themselves to blame for whatever consequences follow. From the perspective of the Bible, it's reasonable to think that these alternative pictures of Jesus are inspired by Satan, the father of lies. C.S. Lewis, in his imaginative fiction, The Screwtape Letters, published in 1942, pick in chapter 23, pictures a senior demon instructing his nephew on this subject. The idea, says Screwtape, must be used by us to encourage once again the conception of a historical Jesus to be found by clearing away later accretions and perversions, and then to be contrasted with the whole Christian tradition. In this last generation, we promote the construction of such a historical Jesus on liberal and humanitarian lines. We are now, 1942, putting forward a new historical Jesus on Marxian, catastrophic, and revolutionary lines. The advantage of the constructions which you intend to change every 30 years or so are manifold. So, another historical Jesus. We need to be aware of this strategy and help people see that the real historical Jesus is the Jesus of the Bible. We turn to our second category, another spiritual Jesus. What do we mean by another spiritual Jesus? Here we mean someone who is the founder of a major religion, one who claims to do the sort of spiritual things that the Bible claims for Jesus. What are these sorts of things? Well, this founder shows his followers what ultimate reality is like, helps them to overcome life's obstacles, leads them to eternal life, or the equivalent. Well, if we attempt to list other spiritual Jesuses before the time of Jesus, this would presumably include Buddha, Zoroaster, and a number of other less well-known figures. Jesus probably was speaking of people of the sort when he said in John 10:8, "All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them." Since the time of Jesus, I would suggest, among others less well-known, various Jewish persons professing to be the Messiah. We know about, for instance, Bar Kokhba, right after Jesus' time, the 2nd century, and Shabbatai Zvi in the 17th century, I believe it was. Muhammad, Emanuel Swedenborg, Joseph Smith, Sung Myung Moon. To these we might add today Eastern Lightning, a messianic movement in China today. Even in Orthodox circles, the idea that Jesus is a vending machine or a Buddha to give us health and wealth, rather than the one who is saving us from our sin and sending us out on a mission, is popular and represents another spiritual Jesus. We should not be surprised about these either, as they would fall under the Bible's categories of false prophets and false Christs. We turn to our third category, another political Jesus. What do we mean by another political Jesus? Well, one of the defining characteristics of the Old Testament Messiah is that he is to be the ruler of the world. See Daniel 7, 13, and 14, which we'll look at in the next panel. So another political Jesus would be one who attempts to be a world ruler. Well, here's what we see in Daniel 7, 13, and 14. Daniel is describing a vision he had. I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming. And he came up to the Ancient of Days, and was presented before him, and to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. Well, if we try to list some other political Jesuses, before the coming of Jesus, these would be such persons as Nebuchadnezzar, Alexander the Great, shown here in an ancient mosaic, Antiochus Epiphanes, the fellow who attempted to set up a statue of himself in the temple about 168 B.C., the Jerusalem Jewish temple in Jerusalem about 168 B.C., and Caesar Augustus. Since the coming of Jesus, we would include Nero, Muhammad, Genghis Khan, Napoleon, Stalin, Mao Zedong, plus many others who were nowhere near as successful as these were. If we try to put together these various pictures, what do we get when we try to put together the historical, spiritual, and political attempts to replace Jesus? Collectively, we might call these antichrists, as does the Apostle John. He says, next panel, that they were already around in his own time. 1 John 2:18 and 19. Children, it is now the last hour, just as you have heard that Antichrist is coming. Even now, many antichrists have appeared. From this we know that it is the last hour. They went out from us, but they were not really of us. For if they had been of us, they would have remained with us. But they went out so that it would be shown that they are not of us. John distinguishes these antichrists from the Antichrist who is coming. This is more clearly seen in Jesus' Olivet Discourse, in Paul's remarks about the man of lawlessness, and in the picture of the beast in Revelation. Let's look at each of these. In Jesus' Olivet Discourse, we have this reference to the abomination of desolation, not really explained in Matthew 24, but connected somehow with the prophecies of Daniel. Jesus says, Matthew 24:15, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains. Whoever is on the housetop must not go down to get the things out of it that are in his house. Whoever is in the field must not turn back to get his cloak. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. But pray that your flight will not be in the winter or on a Sabbath. For then there will be great tribulation, such as not occurred since the beginning of the world, unto now, nor ever will. Paul speaks of the lawless one in 2 Corinthians 2:5 through 10. He says, don't you remember that while I was still with you, I was telling you these things? And you know what restrains him now, so that in his time he will be revealed. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he's taken out of the way. Then that lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will slay with the breath of his mouth and bring to an end by the appearance of his coming. That is, the one whose coming is in accord with the activity of Satan, with all power and signs and false wonders, and with all the deception of wickedness for those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth so as to be saved. John records for us in the book of Revelation a vision which he had, which pictures apparently more or less the same things in a rather, which we say, more symbolic form, as is typical of visions, both in the Old and New Testament. He says of the dragon, who has been explained in elsewhere in Revelation as Satan, "And the dragon stood on the sand of the seashore. Then I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads. And on his horns were 10 diadems, and on his heads were blasphemous names. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and throne and great authority. I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed. And whole earth was amazed and followed after the other beast. They worshipped the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like the beast? And who is able to wage war with him?" Well, those three suggest, I believe, that future to the time of the New Testament, and I believe still future to us, there will be one coming who, in some sense, sums up the success and themes of these other Jesuses to become the other Jesus, preeminently the Antichrist. Conclusions. Well, beware of false prophets. In more detail, the Lord wants us, without becoming paranoid, to know what's going on around us, what's happening historically, what's happening spiritually as best we can discern it. We can't see the spiritual world, but we can see its manifestations in our own world, and we can judge them by the spiritual tests that the Bible gives. What's going on politically? The Lord wants us to help others see who Jesus is and to flee to him as our only hope. So that's basically the end of our talk. Flee to Jesus. For further information on Gnosticism, the New Age movement, liberal lives of Christ, and biblical prophecy, see our website of the Interdisciplinary Biblical Research at www.ibri.org, where we have a large number of PowerPoint talks on both on some of these topics and on evidence for the truth of Christianity.